FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 3619. Just got back from Toronto. I am still trying to warm up. Of course, I get back to Florida and we have what's considered a cold day in Florida. It's 58 degrees. Everybody's shivering, but compared to PDAC and Toronto, I am thrilled with 58 degrees for sure. You know, these times are so uncertain. It is so difficult to know what you should do with your portfolio, with your precious metal holdings, all of these things, and figured it would be a good time to reconnect with our good friend Jim Paplava. And you know Jim well from his financialsense.com and radio show. I mean, he's been all over. Somebody I look up to greatly, a fellow Austrian economist. And Jim, it's great to have you on. You know, I'm looking at the market. It's recovered most of its earlier or its losses from the end of last year. People are starting to think its happy days are here again.
You know, I just don't buy it. But, you know, it's really a surprising market. I mean, if you take a look at where we are, as you mentioned, we just about recovered from where we were on the low of December 24th. But a lot of that is so dependent on what is happening on the market. Can you point to something fundamental that has happened since the beginning of the year that is driving stock prices? You can't. But what you can point to is the Federal Reserve did a complete 180. I mean, in September of last year, Chairman Powell said we're far from neutral. So the market took that and interpreted it to mean, well, they're going to start being aggressive and raising interest rates. They started out last year with 3 rate hikes. They went to 4. Then in October, they reemphasized the same point. And once again in December, when they said that their quantitative tightening program was on automatic pilot. So the market didn't like that. Well, what happened in January? Oh, by the way, I think we can sit back and just kind of pause and be patient. So they all started singing from the same hymn book, and the market took off. And a lot of this is quantitative trading, the program trading that we see that, well, I'll give you an example. We went into October of last year with oil prices. WTI was at 77. We had $87 on Brent crude. And in a period of 2 months, oil prices dropped 40%. And then we started out from December 24th, and oil prices are up 30%. So how do you explain a 40% drop and a 30% rise in a period of 2 months? Can you talk about fundamentals that did that? I don't think you can.
Yeah, that's a good question. So what caused it then? It's just financial panic, financial fear, just the intervention of the Fed and the reliance upon the government to keep this economy going?
You know, let's begin with oil. I mean, we had in June, the president comes out and he says, look, we're going to walk away from the Iranian deal. And then he says, 90 days after August 5th, if they haven't complied, we're going to slap these sanctions on. In the meantime, which implies that, you know, nearly 2 million barrels of oil was going to be taken offline along with the OPEC cuts, which were close to 2 million barrels. That's a lot of oil. So the president tweets and says, you know, you guys need to start pumping, which is what they did. Saudi Arabia started pumping out record amounts of oil. So did Russia. They basically went against the cuts they had put in place because everybody's thinking, well, come November, Iran will not have or complied with what the president wanted, and you're going to have 2 million barrels taken off the market. Well, what happens on November 5th is the president grants waivers to all 8 countries, and the price plummets. So everybody that was in the futures market that was betting long oil all of a sudden went in the opposite direction, throw in program trading, which permeates just about every asset class, mm-hmm. and you have 40% drop. Wow. And then all of a sudden, Saudi Arabia and OPEC in the, immediately the following month and said, oh, we're going to cut. And they're cutting 1.2 million barrels. So you, this is what I'm saying. A lot of factors go into play today that are more political, a little bit more difficult to forecast what the president's going to tweet or what he's going to say, or for example, the complete 180 with the Federal Reserve after the market's down about 20%.
Mm-hmm. So the unpredictability, the uncertainty of what the government's going to do is really kind of making this market much more volatile and uncertain. So how do you play it? Like, what do you do to minimize your risk here?
Well, we started getting defensive. And the reason we're doing that is, first of all, what the Fed was doing. And, you know, we've had, 12 recessions since World War II, and 11 of them were preceded by Fed rate hikes. Mm-hmm. And so the only time these guys have ever engineered a soft landing was in 1994. And so, you know, when you're in the middle of or towards the end of a rate raising cycle, something bad's going to happen. These guys generally tend to raise rates. We have a saying on the show, they'll raise them until something breaks in the economy or in the stock markets. Now, we were following global indicators, and the global PMIs were starting to roll over. Our PMIs were starting to roll over. So you went from a 4% growth rate in the second quarter to a 3% growth rate in the third quarter to a little over 2% in the fourth quarter. You had the ISM manufacturing, non-manufacturing, a lot of the indicators were starting to soften. So what we began to do is shorten maturities on bonds. We went into treasuries and got more defensive. And you have to be that way because, you know, once again, it's, we know that they're not done raising interest rates. And if, and I think we could see this happen, we have a trade deal with China, which, you know, the market's kind of pricing in. And then with that trade deal, the market might take off a little bit. Maybe economic growth picks up. Inflation might be picking up with wages and higher oil prices. And all of a sudden it comes to June and the Fed starts changing its tune again. And all of a sudden they're going to talk about, well, maybe we might want to raise rates maybe one or two more times, because I think they're going to try to go to 3%. The only thing that's going to stop them is if the economy does not recover and continues its downward slope. So we may get a bump here in at the end of the second quarter. Typically, if you look at this economic recovery since 2009, the second and third quarter of the year has been the strongest. So these guys can flip once again. And so that's why I don't think, unless you're very astute as a trader, and we interview some of the best technicians on Wall Street. But let me give you an example. You take the beginning of 2018, in the first 4 weeks of the year, 1 week after another, we were setting record after record after record. And then all of a sudden, the last day, the last Friday in January, we get an unemployment report that has higher wages. And in 6 days, we gave back the entire gains of the year in just 6 days. I don't know of a technician that picked up that was going to happen. Fast forward again. We start building momentum, heading into September, week after week. We're heading right back up, hitting new highs. The Federal Reserve says something in a meeting and says that they're far from a neutral. A week later, the market starts a downward trend, and then we end up the year on a negative basis. Now, if you were to look at this from a fundamental point of view, we began 2018 with a $1.5 trillion tax cut, with corporate rates coming down from 35% down to 21 or 22%. So you knew corporate earnings were going to go up. We had additional $300 billion of additional spending that was passed. So on the economic front, the economy was growing at the fastest rate in nearly a decade. Corporate profits were coming in at 25%. Every single quarter. I don't think anybody in January would have predicted we would ended up the year negative in just about every asset class.
Yeah, who could have predicted? Because it seemed extremely bullish, didn't it? All that money coming in, profits, you know, really going up by as much as a third for many of the high tax traditional manufacturers and businesses. So this should have been extraordinarily bullish. What happened here?
You know, once again, it's the government. You know, what happened with oil was pulling out of the Iranian deal, which everybody was anticipating that was going to be another 2 million barrels taken offline. So Saudi Arabia and Russia stepped up production. Then what happened in November? The president doesn't go along with the sanctions and grants waivers. So down oil goes. And everybody, it's like every in the futures market, which is leveraged, and we also have program trading permeating that. If everybody's on one side of the boat and all of a sudden whatever is causing everybody to be on that side of the boat switches, you get these violent moves in the market. Then you have the Fed, which started out the year last year saying, well, we're going to raise three times. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the year, when economic growth is powering ahead, we had 4% economic growth in the second quarter, the Fed announces, well, we're going to raise four times. And so when we got to September, when everybody's anticipating four rate hikes, which is what we got, then all of a sudden the Fed says, you know what, we're far from neutral, implying that, hey, we may get another three or four the following year. And then all of a sudden they switch it in January. So this is what makes this market, you throw in program trading, leverage into the market, and you have a lot of the problems that we saw, and you have these violent moves. I mean, if you look at just what happened to the stock market in January, what changed? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Economic growth is slowing. Corporate profits are slowing. The only thing that changed was the Fed's attitude on interest rates.
And I guess that's all it took, right?
Yep. And all of a sudden, everybody that was betting short went long, and voila, here we are.
Yeah, so that leads to the next question. And can you make money being a contrarian investor? And along those lines, because a big contrarian play now would be so-called value, which value investors haven't made any outsized returns in years and years. It's all been about momentum and so-called growth stocks. So is that going to come back? I mean, is that a way to play this market?
That's what I would be doing. That's what we're doing. And there's a good reason why I think you haven't seen value play out in this market. If you take a look at the Obama administration, we had economic growth that was barely 2%. So we had very, very slow economic growth. And when you are in a slow economic growth environment, what really did well in that environment were growth stocks. So, you know, you had the FANG stocks, you had the Amazons, you had the Microsofts, you had the Googles. These were companies that were growing at double-digit rates in an economy that was barely hitting 2%. In fact, many years, the economic growth rate was less than 2%. So growth came in fashion, and the reason for that was the slow growth during that period of time. So hence, you know, if you take a look at up until October last year, for almost 2 or 3 years, if you were in FANG stocks, I mean, you got to valuations where Amazon and Apple, which are both great companies, but can you say they're worth $1 trillion apiece? I don't think so. But that's what fostered growth over value, because economic growth was so anemic. Now, where economic growth is slowing globally, and you're seeing it slow down here, I think value's coming back in fashion. And that's, if I was playing this market, which is what we're doing, the stocks that we're buying, we're looking for stocks that are beaten up, down 30, 40%. High quality companies have strong balance sheets, good free cash flow that have been beaten up. You can find them sometimes in the tech sector. You're finding them a few in the consumer staples sector. And also, we are finding them in commodities. We happen to be bullish on copper. I mean, everybody's talking about green energy and electric cars. You and I are going to trade in our gasoline cars, and 10 years from now, you and I are going to be driving electric cars. Well, guess what those electric cars require? They require cobalt, which comes mainly from one nation in Africa called the Congo.
Yes,
and
the DRC.
Then also, those electric cars require copper wiring. And so we like copper. We like energy, which has been beaten up and is still a value. I mean, I can buy an energy stock, a refinery stock, get a dividend yield of 3 to 6% at a low PE multiple. I mean, a lot of the earnings last year were energy companies.
Very true. So copper, and who knows how long this so-called electric car revolution is going to take. My personal opinion is it's going to take a lot longer than anybody ever believed possible, because it's a rebuilding of the infrastructure from the ground up. And I don't see all of these mainline old auto manufacturers really jumping in there to get on the bandwagon. They've been very slow and very cautious, only putting out high-end EVs like BMW and like Mercedes now. So yeah, you have the GM has their Bolt. The Volt didn't do too good, but now they have the Bolt. And, you know, how long is this thing really going to take?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
If you're like me, there are so many great business books out there that you want to read, or that your friends tell you to read, and you just don't have the time to do it. But now there's an app that I highly recommend, and it will solve this problem for you once and for all. It's called Blinkist, and it has all the famous titles from authors like Gary Vaynerchuk, Tim Ferriss, or Seth Godin. Did you know that Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands upon thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them all down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to? Blinkist is made for busy people like you and I, people who want to get the main points of the books quickly without having to read the entire thing. Blinkist has an audio feature that makes it a breeze to finish 4 books a day while you're on the go. Over 8 million people are using Blinkist at this very moment, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, history books, you name it, Blinkist has it. Look, I like Blinkist because when I'm on the go, when I'm working out at the gym or driving, I can read books like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, and my personal favorite, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. You got to go to Blinkist. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you. Go over to Blinkist.com/FSN to start your free 7-day trial. That's right. Blinkist, Blinkist.com/FSN to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/FSN. Get started now.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
You know, it's the problem with electric cars, and I have a nephew that bought a Tesla. He lives in Arizona, and he's driving over to visit us in San Diego. You know, I used to drive over to Phoenix to visit my mom when she was living. And, you know, I pull into Yuma. It takes me 5 minutes to fill up my tank of gas, and I'm on my way. When he pulled into Yuma, it took him 45 minutes to charge his car. And the first thing he did when he got to San Diego, he had to find Tesla charging station. I don't think that's the way people want to travel, is, you know, you're going across country and, you know, every 2 or 3 hours, you're going to have to pull into some spot and, you know, get a burger or something and wait for 45 minutes. I think what they're going to have to do, this is the only way I could see this working, is either they're going to have to perfect batteries so they can last longer, or something that might make sense is you pull into a station and they take your existing batteries out and put new ones in, and you're on your way in 5 minutes. But outside of that, I don't know how we're going to see people, because people love to drive. You know, you take vacations, drive across country, look at all the motor homes that we see on the highway in trucks. I mean, you're going to have a truck that's going to be hauling a lot of stuff. I know Tesla's working on one, but my goodness, how much will they be carrying in batteries?
Might be carrying more batteries than freight.
I don't see a 787 in the air, you know, flying across the Atlantic in with batteries or solar power. Or you know, an oil tanker or some ship coming from Asia with manufactured goods to the port of Los Angeles being driven by batteries either.
Highly unlikely for sure. And they could make batteries that charge a lot faster. That is a possibility that might happen. Or, like you said, batteries that you'll go 1,000 miles on a charge. So that'll mean that you'll want to recharge it after 750 miles. And if you skip a couple of fill-ups at the station, then maybe we're starting to get to a point where it kind of makes sense. But I just don't see the rush here. It's a novelty niche vehicle right now, and it's hardly taken the world by storm. But hey, you mentioned running a 787 on batteries. So we got this alarming bent towards socialism here, typified, personified by AOC, as she's known as Ocasio-Cortez, or also known as Occasional Cortex. I mean, we've spent centuries fighting this battle against socialism, Jim. And now it looks like we're back to the beginning again. Like we've learned, as the old saying goes, we've learned nothing and forgotten nothing.
Well, it's, you know, just take a look at what's going on in Venezuela. Look at Cuba. And it's a reminder. I mean, Bernie Sanders was talking about Sweden, a socialist country, and the premier or president of Sweden, he says, no, we're not a socialist country. And, you know, you take a look at the Soviet Union or you take a look at China, where they've got basically state-oriented capitalism. It doesn't work. I call the 2020 election the lots of free stuff that other people pay for election, because free college, free living wages. What else do they want to give for free? Free medical
college,
for all.
Free college and yeah, free.
Yeah, and yeah, all that stuff's free. Well, there's nothing free. Somebody's going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's.
And personally, I don't think we have the money to do this. I think, you know, we're running, what, the deficit this year will be close to $1 trillion. And then if you look at, we're $22 trillion in debt. In 2020, interest on the debt will exceed what we spend annually on Medicaid. By 2023 and 2024, interest on the debt will exceed the entire defense budget of the United States. And then if you get to like 25, 26, interest on the debt will exceed all government discretionary spending outside of Social Security and entitlements. So we see the next decade as an inflationary decade, where the government will have to spend money, fiscal spending will increase, and the Fed will be forced to monetize it.
Yeah, so, and that leads us into precious metals.
We're bullish on commodities in the next decade. I don't care if you're looking at copper, if you're looking at energy. You know, I follow the oil markets very closely. And like anything else, it was the small little companies that went in, the Permian Basin, the Eagle Ford, the Bakken. And they did the exploration. They discovered, they came out with fracking and some of the technology that we see. But none of those companies have really made any money in positive cash flow. And they've been financed heavily with debt. Well, if you look at what's happening now in the shale plays, it's the big guys that are coming in that are taking over. The Exxons, the Chevrons, the BPs, Royal Dutch is moving into Texas. Chevron and Exxon will be producing nearly 1 million barrels a day. So the little guys are going to have a tough time making it. Wall Street is getting fed up. You know, they've heard the story, yeah, more growth, and eventually you're going to be positive. It's not happening. So, and the other thing is, if you look at these shale wells, they deplete very rapidly. Usually the maximum growth comes out the first and the second year. 80% of a lot of the drilling that's going on right now is replacing existing depleted wells. So a lot of the shale drillers, especially the smaller ones, are having to run faster and faster and faster. So I think shale is overstated in terms of what it's going to do. I mean, they're talking about, you know, eventually we're going to be producing 20 million barrels a day. I don't buy that, but, you know, I never thought we'd be producing 12. So
that's
but
the thing.
I see it as a decade of where we're going to go through another commodity cycle, very much like we did in the last decade. But I think a lot of this is going to be government-induced, because our government, the European government, other governments are producing massive deficits that are going to have to be financed by central banks.
Yeah, there's really no other way to do it, is there? I mean, there's not enough money. You can't, even if you took all of the richest assets in the country, even if you could do it.
You'd run the government for a year.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
No. And, I think it's, everybody's heard the famous saying of Margaret Thatcher, the problem with socialism is you eventually run out of other people's money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. That's for sure. And it looks like we're at that stage. A lot of other countries have gone past that point. So metals, a good defensive move. But mining companies, they've got energy issues. There's a lot of issues with mining companies. There are some good ones out there. How you run your business really determines whether you're going to succeed or not, more so than high metal prices, right?
Yeah, I'm not as, there's a few good mining companies, but if you take a look at the trend, you had Barrick buy Randgold, you had Newmont buy Goldcorp. Now Barrick wants to buy Newmont, which might make sense since they operate most of the gold out of the United States comes out of the Carlin Trend in Nevada, and both of them have sizable operations. So there might be some cost efficiencies there. But the fact is, both Barrick and Newmont were 7 million plus ounce producers a decade ago. They're not that today. They're 5 million and less. So they're not making major discoveries. And so the only way they're replacing their reserves, let's put it this way, if you've got ounces going out the front door, you better have ounces coming in the back door with discoveries, or eventually you're going to run out of ounces. So in order to maintain production, the only thing they can do is go mining for ounces on Wall Street. And that's happening across the board. There just hasn't been. Many people feel that we've reached peak gold. Now, the one thing that hasn't happened in the mining industry that we've seen happen in energy, there hasn't been a technological breakthrough, although there is a consortium going on right now with Mike Bloomberg, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and Ray Dalio of Bridgewater fame. They're kind of doing the equivalent of Google Maps,
right,
of the globe, and they've made some cobalt discoveries. The problem with getting back to this green energy is batteries need cobalt. Well, 60% of the cobalt comes from the Congo, not a very stable place. So they're hoping they might be able to use this technology to pinpoint areas where there's large deposits of a natural resource. Now, they've got one or two discoveries in cobalt. We'll see if that matures and turns into something that's prolific. But we just haven't seen the technology in the mining business that we've seen in energy.
I think we're starting to see some. AI is getting very big. Virtual reality, 3D imaging type things. Satellite, just like you were saying with the Google Earth type thing, where it's identifying potential deposits. And I think we're on the threshold of it. But again, it requires a lot of capital. And a lot of these lower capitalized, undercapitalized junior miners just can't afford to do it. And,
and they're not getting the capital. I mean, nobody, I don't know if any investor, there's one or two companies that we're involved in, or at least I am personally, but it's based on the track record of the person running the company. And but they're very few and far between, nowhere near what we saw last year, last decade, where we saw a lot of new discoveries that were made by a lot of these small junior mining companies. We're just not seeing it now.
Yeah. And effectively, the majors have subcontracted out to the juniors to go find the gold because they just don't know how to do it anymore. They're much the same as the major oil companies. They really would rather go buy the reserves than go develop them themselves. And that's definitely a trend that we've seen for the past decade, probably going to continue on. Well, Jim, really appreciate your coming on. Just tell us, we want to connect with you on the web. Where's the best place to find you these days?
They can find us at financialsense.com and on iTunes as Financial Sense. Well, listen, it was a pleasure speaking with you again and coming on your program.
Hey, appreciate it. Any questions or comments for Jim, just email us, kl@carrielutz.com. The Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. You're watching on YouTube, listening to a podcast, please subscribe, like, and share. Really helps us a lot when you do that. Helps get these ideas out from people like Jim that just aren't widespread enough. Even though, Jim, you're so popular and you've accomplished so much, still ignorance is prevalent. Economic ignorance, chief among the various forms of ignorance, is just prevalent in the U.S. and the world. And thank you for doing your part to try to turn the tide and get people to think and act in your own benefit.
Well, thanks for having me. All the best.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.